sounding rod, for I hear distant thunder. All of these metaphors are part of our language. So do you have, life storms, maybe? They call it Stormy Monday, but Tuesday's just as bad. T-Bone Walker, 1947, believe it. No, I didn't. I wasn't there. Taylor Swift. The drought was the very worst when the flowers that we'd grown together died of thirst. It was months and months of back and forth. You're still all over me like a wine-stained dress I can't wear anymore. Hung my head as I lost the war, and the sky turned black like a perfect storm. Political storms? It's fascinating. I saw a headline. Economists are mystified that the storms swirling around Trump and Clinton and around Brexit in England are raising few waves in the markets. It's exactly the language that they used. Fascinating. So what storms are you in? A bad physical exam? A poor on-the-job evaluation? You're a David facing Goliath, unsustainable debt, losing your edge, your personality? Churches face storms too, and some of them shipwreck. Reinhold Niebuhr famously likened his church to Noah and the ark. If it weren't for the storm outside, we could not stand the stench within. Kind of a gloomy picture of the church, isn't it? Riders on the Storm was the last recording of the Doors. They performed it only twice, and it was, I think, a Friday night and a Saturday night, and that was the end. The second verse about a killer on the road, it was not only metaphorical about the dangers that are in life all around us, but it likely refers to Billy Cook, who murdered six people, including a young family, while he was hitchhiking to California. There's a killer on the road. His brain is squirming like a toad. If you give this man a ride, sweet family will die. I wonder if that's how the disciples felt about Jesus in their storm. At his command, they gave the man a ride, and all hell broke loose. He slept while they saw death staring them down. They woke him. "Don't you care that we drown?" He stills the storm. They're even more afraid. Who is this? That's the story in the synopsis. Let's take a step back and see what this is trying to tell us. Jesus told the disciples to get into the boat and go to the other side. So it's logical to ask, where were they and what is the other side? We know from the previous bits that they were in Jewish territory. So the other side, we'll find out in the stories that unfold in the next few weeks, he goes into Gentile territory, into non-Jewish territory. So they go from the safety of the Jewish homeland and sail toward where the wild things are. The storms, therefore, this particular storm is less a personal or relational or political metaphor as it is a missional metaphor. The further out we go in God's mission to bring peace and healing and the kingdom of God to the world, the more the prevailing cultural winds will be against us, just as they were against the first church. Something there is that does not want all peoples to follow Jesus. And so there's resistance. In the Bible, as we read the stories, the disciples don't go anywhere without Jesus unless he sends them and assures them that he will send them into safety. They must have Jesus with them. Some of you would know, maybe most of you, that the church architecture going way back saw this shape as a boat. That's the keel, and if you flip it, then it's in the water. The area where you are sitting is called the... Good for you. It's called the nave because it's got all those waves in it, you see. And you're sitting among the waves. Most people in the naves, however, do not want to go to the other side. They would prefer that the boat stay safely anchored to shore. Then we can be sure of things. But if we are to follow Jesus and he wants to go to the other side, we've got no choice but to stay with him and to trust. It's very tempting to stay put. The church is not a luxury liner granting passage and comfort to all who qualify and clamber on board. That's Lutheran Bishop Lyle Mill. But rather, it's like a rescuing lifeboat, sometimes listing, even leaking, but always guided by the captain, Jesus, at the helm. So that's the boat we're in. In the waves and in the weather, we cannot control the weather, the wind, or the water. That's why we want to stay safely anchored to shore. Like Captain John's boat, remember that one? Just came to my mind. That restaurant down there never moved. We can do very little on our own. Sometimes it's not our fault. Bad things happen to good people. Even the world of faithful Christians sometimes comes crashing down. What's important to see in this, one of the important things to see in this reading, is that the disciples are in a mess precisely because of Jesus. It's not that they messed up and went somewhere that they shouldn't. They followed Jesus, and they're in deep trouble. God can control the chaos, though it's not always on our schedule. Have you noticed? So the disciples wake Jesus up, crying, "We're all gonna die." Don't you care is the question. Where is God in your storm? We expect others to recognize the trouble that we're in and to respond appropriately, that God would share our sense of panic about the situation. If people and God act detached, they don't care. A colleague of apologist Michael Ramsden asked a South Asian audience to close their eyes and imagine peace. Let's try that. Right? Close your eyes and imagine peace. Okay, this is very short. I should probably give you a half an hour on that. But what did you imagine? What came to your mind as you imagined peace? Just a word or a phrase or two. Countryside, yes.
Children's voices.
Children's voices, okay. Water, okay. God, good. Anyone else? Canoe, yeah. In this particular audience, as with the 8:30 service, I think, Uta, you're the first one to not follow this, which is interesting. When his audience shared their mental pictures of peace, one described a field of flowers that came up at the early service, beautiful trees. Another saw snow-capped mountains that came up at the first service. an alpine landscape, you know, the mountains, of course. Somebody at the first service said sand, another beautiful still lake. All those imaginings of peace had one thing in common, except for Uta's. There were no other people in it. Isn't it interesting? When asked to imagine peace, our first impulse is to leave everybody else out. When you have to listen to abuse, said Augustine of Hippo, you are buffeted by the wind. When your anger is aroused, you are tossed by the waves. When the winds blow and the waves are high, the boat is in danger. Your heart is imperiled, taking a battering. On hearing yourself insulted, you long to retaliate, but revenge brings with it shipwreck. Why? Because Christ is asleep in you. What do I mean, said Hippo, Augustine? I mean you have forgotten his presence. Rouse Jesus, remember him, and let him keep watch within you. Pay heed to him. Great advice from the fourth century. In the midst of chaos, we need to trust. We must trust God. And I want to suggest to you that sometimes, I think I suggested this before, sometimes that means curling up and having a nap as Jesus naps. Last February, I took 8 days at the Ignatian Loyola House in Guelph. And it was 8 days of silence. The first 4 days, I spent quieting my voice so that I could hear God's voice better. That's what I did the first 4 days. The second 4 days, I was instructed to do this. Imagine the various concerns I had about a certain decision I had to make. Imagine those concerns as if they were part of, they were railroad cars. And what I should do would be to run that train slowly by Jesus' eyes and see how he responded to my concerns in that train, one car after another. So I did. And I was really disappointed because Jesus was not nearly as concerned about my concerns as I thought he should be. So when I returned to Toronto, I drove to the bishop's office and asked for permission to retire because I knew you would be in his good hands and I could trust you with him. Whatever comes, Jesus will see you safe to the other side. I find it fascinating, though. There's another story of people sleeping. This time, the whole thing is reversed. It's on Jesus' last night on earth. He commands his disciples to stay awake while he sailed into conflict in Gethsemane. And in the garden, the disciples fall asleep, and he has to go wake them up. Get up and pray so you will not fall into temptation, he said. So the question then becomes, do you hold Jesus to a higher standard than you hold yourself? That is, the world's in a mess. Are you asleep? Wake up and pray that God might intervene. Back in the boat in Luke 8, Jesus responds to the disciples, "What's wrong with you? Why are you cowardly? Do you lack faith?" And then he rebukes the wind and the waves. The word rebuke is exactly the same word that's used for when he rebukes demons. This is devilish resistance. And it's then that his friends have fear, Mark says, great fear and amazement. Who is this? That even the wind and the waves obey him. But notice, please, whether it's the storm or Jesus stilling the storm, the disciples are afraid. sure sounds like us. Doesn't matter what, there is fear. Though miracles had happened around them and to them, they still don't believe. So here's a second question for group discussion. If the disciples had had faith, what would they have done differently? You all, many of you are mature believers. You follow Jesus for a long time. Maybe your first time into the church boat, but what do you think the disciples could have done differently if they had had faith? Wake him up earlier. Hey, Jesus, got some wind and waves. Would you mind just stilling them for us? Yeah, that'd be great. Okay. Pray. Anyone else? Yes. Help with the rudder. They themselves could have commanded the waves to stop. Fascinating. Yes.
Enjoy the ride.
Enjoy the ride. Woo! We're going to sink. I don't know. But even his followers prove to be cowards. Even when that happens, he doesn't give up on them. Challenges their faith, then stills it and moves on. Pray that Jesus works miracles in us and in our neighborhoods, but miracles won't let us off the hard work that God has for us to do. I suggest to you a change in metaphor, although it still picks up on the wind and the waves. How could we soar together? The majestic albatross, with the longest wingspan of any bird, spends 18 months at sea, gliding above the turbulence with very little flapping of the wings. The question is, how do they do that? It's a study of science, and what's been determined is how they do that is the wind speed is higher the further away from the water. But as it gets close to the water, the friction slows the wind down. So what they do is dynamic soaring, moving between the different speeds of wind, catching the stillness at the bottom, slows them down, but then moving higher speeds them up. And they can go that way for miles and for hours without ever having to flap. Herman Melville described an albatross in spiritual terms. It was during a prolonged gale in waters hard upon the Antarctic Sea, I saw a regal, feathery thing of unspotted whiteness, and with a hooked Roman bill sublime. At intervals, it arched forth its vast archangel wings as if it's embraced some holy ark. Wondrous fluttering and throbbings shook it. Though bodily unharmed, it uttered cries as some king's ghost in supernatural distress. Through its inexpressible strange eyes, methought I peeped to secrets which took hold of God. As Abraham before the angels, I bowed myself. The white thing was so white, its wings so wide, and in those forever exiled waters, I had lost the miserable warping memories of traditions and of towns. Long I gazed at the prodigy of plumage. Point being this, the Lord our shepherd will lead us beside still waters. But that same Lord, who's master of the wind and waves, will also send us against the winds around us. Spiritual skill for us is to weave back and forth between the speeds so that we continue to soar. You should learn how to do that because storms are inevitable anyway. They're going to be coming. Our intended wing, our high desire for God, developed by God, can enable us, like the albatross, to be riders on the storm, learning the currents of grace. I want to finish with just a short paragraph by Frederick Buechner. Christ sleeps in our deepest selves, he said. And whatever we do in whatever time we have left, wherever we go, may we, in whatever way we can, call on him as the fishermen did in their boat to come awake within us, to give us courage, to give us hope, to show us each one our way. May Christ be with us, especially when the winds go mad and the waves go wild. And they will for all of us before we're done, so that even in their midst, we may find peace, and even peace with each other, because we find Christ who holds us together in his love. Amen.